Yo, yo, yo. What's going on, people? Welcome once again to I'm Not Supposed to Be Here.
Woo! I can't hit that. No more Wuhan will do it for me, but this is Christian, aka Eclectic Sage. I'm losing my voice, as you could kind of tell. I can hit those high notes, so less exaggerated, but still smiling. So
it's all good. You're here. And I am your other host, Trent L. Dixon. And then we have a very special guest today, my good friend Gad, who I haven't seen in a long time. What's going on, Gad? How you feeling, brother?
So subtle. Too drippy.
Feel good to be here. Sorry, excuse me. You know, the weather has been pretty terrible lately. I was going to curse, but I don't know what type of vibe we got.
No, you're good. You can cuss. Only thing, we only really bleep out certain things.
Yeah, I got you.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely if we're talking about we bleep it out. Because they get no shine.
Yeah, no, 100%. 100%. That's funny. But yeah, the weather in New York City has just been so bad. Like, we got 60-degree weather on Wednesday, and it's raining. Then yesterday, it was 29 degrees. Everybody's getting sick.
Yeah, I think it's like 30-something today.
All over the place. But, you know, I'm good to be here. I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to be alive. Happy to be able to experience life in the way that I've been able to as of late, especially with, like, the growth that I feel like I've had over the past, you know, few months.
It is a W.
So, yes, you know, coming into the new year hot, coming into the new year strong, really, really anticipating some good things for the next year. And overall, you know, just good vibes.
I like that. Anything you can share with us, up and coming things? Or is it like you're keeping it under wraps until it happens?
Only thing I would say is that, like, I'm going on a solo trip to New Orleans coming up on spring break. Think of way ahead. Christmas break, actually.
Yeah. That's what's up.
I figured that I wanted to try to, like, go someplace else out of state. My first trip out of state by plane, actually, was when I was 22 when I went to Las Vegas for my birthday. And, you know, I really enjoyed the trip there. And I figured, you know, like, since I'm able to, since I, you know, my mom definitely is somebody that wanted to really, like, go there for the culture and, like, experience the culture, experience, like, what it's like to be in such a really high energy place, especially for, you know, our ancestry and our culture, wanted to take on the reins of that and do it myself. So, you know,
that's amazing.
Definitely would be, like, a little bit of a, I wouldn't say spiritual journey, but definitely, like, a journey for, like, my mental fortitude, my emotional well-being, and overall just knowing of myself and where I came from. Mm-hmm.
That's exciting. So you have family from there?
Or? No, not at all.
No, but just no, but I know what you mean, like, just where you came from, like, just kind of, like, spiritually and just, like, the culture of it and how a lot of, like, Southern culture, especially from New Orleans, just kind of just emanates just through American culture just overall.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Yeah. Damn. So I saw you on the train. it was like a month ago, maybe something like that.
I think it was actually like 2-3 weeks ago.
2-3 weeks ago. Yeah, pretty close to it. You said you had. Well, first you said you hadn't seen my face before.
Yeah,
which is crazy. I forgot.
That was so funny.
Because I used to when I worked at when I worked at I never showed my face like that first year. I always had my mask on because we all started working there during COVID times.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was wild.
Yeah, that was a wild time.
So it's been like 2 years since we saw each other.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yo, so we chopped it up a little bit, and then you were telling me about some of the stuff you were doing. I was like, yo, Gad would be perfect to have on the show.
He was not mask fishing, right?
What's up?
You're not. You met expectations.
No, like when I saw you, he said on your left, and I was like Captain America. I looked over and I was like. Trent, that's you? Like, I've never seen this man's face before.
Oh,
and even, like, after I left Summit to go back to teaching, and also my other retail job at the time, too, it was like, I was like, yo, who is this man? Like, what are you doing on a train? But then, like, once he started talking, I was like, oh, yeah, that's definitely Trent Tavius Bartholomew Jones.
Yeah. I love you. You guys have matching mustaches. I'm loving it. I'm loving the vibes.
Happy accents. Happy accents.
This is my first time meeting you, so it's a pleasure to have you. I love this podcast so much.
Yeah, pleasure to be here. Yeah. Happy you guys invited me. Happy Trent invited me anyways. Especially, you know, I feel like I'm good company. I'm trying to be better company
you're great company.
Myself and for others. So
you, when you left, you were so missed like at the job. Like the energy was totally different.
Yeah, I could tell, especially when Michael, because you know my boy Michael, we go way back to like first year of college, way back.
Yeah, shout out to Michael.
Shout out to my boy Michael. I actually just texted him while I was on the train. but you know, like when I left, he told me like, you know, it just started going really downhill. Like a lot of people, like our managers were just like complete dog water, you know. The experience and the customers were really getting out of hand. And I knew that if I stayed there any longer, I was just going to end up either A, losing my job for blacking on somebody, or B, just not showing up anymore. And I was like, I'd rather do the latter than the former. So I just went back to teaching. I was like, yeah, this is for me. This is where I'm going to stay at. Mm-hmm. And then moved around to some retail jobs, did a retail manager job for like a good few months or so, and then I just stuck with teaching ever since then. So
that's what's up.
Who do you teach?
Middle school.
Oh, okay. You did. Yeah. Wait, there was a little.
Middle schoolers are like. Middle schoolers are interesting, just because of the fact that like they're so emotionally undeveloped, at the same time emotionally passionate, and because of that, it's like a weird mix of like angst and like unknowing, and they just don't know. They just don't know how to.
Yeah, it's a weird in-betweeny stage from like between high school and elementary.
Exactly. Like yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
I love middle school though. It was very fun. It felt like the office, but only in a school format. So I guess Abbott Elementary, but
yeah,
like,
oh, I love Abbott Elementary.
Yeah, it just felt like that, like just from the kids' perspective, because it was just like the administration always tries to do or like throw curveballs at like the teachers and staff, and on top of that, it's just like the kids are just like experiencing a lot of first, and like you're just like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah, exactly. Especially with a lot of firsts too, like you find out so many interesting things, especially with this generation of middle schoolers who have like the newest iPhone for some reason, and I'm like, I have a Google Pixel, like why like why is your parent buying you that, you know? But like because of like the access to social media and like the unrestricted access to the internet, a lot of these kids are just really taking bits and pieces of like what they see and trying to make their own personality out of it. Yeah. And it's gonna be a very interesting next few years as they grow into high school and like where they turn out as adults anyway. So very interested. But you know, for me, I just do my best to try to teach, especially the boys in the class, like morals, how to be, you know, respectful, how to not be a dickhead sometimes. So yeah, you know, it's enjoyable, very interesting, sometimes annoying, but you know, I love my job. I love my job regardless. So
that's what's up. As you should. There's not enough teachers out there. We need more good teachers that enjoy what they do out there.
Thanks.
To help bring in the next generation. But yeah. Sage, how have you been since the last time we recorded?
I've been okay. I'm just coming out of a nasty fever from the last time. I had a nasty fever. I'm still in the middle of finals week. I had to code my own programming language. Lord. That's all I'm going to say on that. But I'm just very happy. I'm very close to the finish line in terms of like just being done with school. And yeah, I'm just happy that's like it's really close to that point in time. And been just playing around with like concepts and really just kind of honing in on like new sounds. And that's been getting me through the week, honestly, just playing with new sounds. Shout out to Prince. Prince has been inspiring me. He got some stuff in the vault that he's been cracking up and just been working on, and I'm just happy that I get to experience it. I get to help him curate it, and then I'm really happy because all my friends are really tough in the arts that they decide to do, and I really have like full faith in the stuff that we're gonna do. And yeah, just a lot of planning, a lot of fun stuff. But just playing around with concepts and ideas, and a lot of fun new sounds.
Yeah.
That's been the main thesis of like lately.
Wow, that's so dope. So wait, are you working on beats from scratch now too?
I have like some sample. So I sample typically. I sampled from like one record and then I chopped. So I know how to sample. I'm really bad at making drums. So high key like drums have been the bane of my existence in terms of like drum programming, and like
question, does that play any Does that play into any decision of you, a lot of your music lately, not being, having drums?
Yeah, so it's very funny because, like, people are like, oh my gosh, you sound so amazing on drums. I'm like, yeah, it sounds amazing. But also, for me, I want to create something that, like, feels very, very new and refreshing. And it's just, like, it's a challenge because I feel like it's very easy for me to make music that is not a challenge. So, like, I could make, like, a track that fits the format of, like, other people's stuff and plays with things, but I like genuinely hearing new sounds. And, you know, I do music for the purists, like the people that, like, really love to, like, vibe out, enjoy the sounds, enjoy the soundscapes. Mm-hmm. I get inspired by Isaiah Rashad. Like, I love when he said, I make music for the vibers. Like, it's not for critics. This is not for this. Yeah. This is when you're feeling, like, in the state where music is, like, able to touch your spirit. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, oh, wow, you could also pack a message, or you could also pack this. And I really want my art to be seen as very revolutionary for the time. And I still have, like, a lot of stuff and a lot of things that I want to do in different genres and play around with different sounds. We live in an era where you're not really bound by having, like, you know, a big release every 6 years. Yeah. So, like, you won't have, like, a Justin Timberlake type of thing unless you're, like, that type of level starting out. But, like, mm-hmm. the distance between projects is cool. But as long as there's cohesion, as long as you're telling, like, for me, I feel like I shine best when I storytell. Mm-hmm. And it's like my wit and bars and stuff like that is okay.
Okay.
Like, okay. I like that. I like doing that, but for me, it tends to be a little complicated. Yeah. So it's just, for me, I like bars that really reinforce a theme. And then from there, I like pushing it like that. But as far as, like, the drumless, yeah, I prefer drumless instrumentals. Like, I love that Alchemist and them, like, they popularized it. Yeah, and, like, Griselda made it more acceptable for people just to rap without drums. And I remember this guy on the train, he was telling me how, you know, it's not necessarily the instruments. It's you, the main focal point of rhythm. And you can create your own rhythm with your voice. And your voice is the most important thing. If that's the type of thing and you don't play instruments, your voice is your instrument. And so I can create the rhythms and have you flow in the way without it. And so it makes me even more melodic in my tone, or more melodic in the way that I do things. So even for songs like Wasteland, like, I really want to touch up, want to lay on you, baby. Really want to grip on your waistline. You call me your favorite. Every punctuation, every stop, every line creates its own rhythm. And so it's wholly from me. You don't really need the instrumental. You don't really need that. Like, and that in itself is a beauty and a skill in itself, and that takes a lot. And that's why it's paying homage to, like, the art form of rap for me. And that's the most important thing.
Nice. Have you ever tried to make music yet?
Funnily enough, when I was teaching at, when was this? I want to say last school year, I was teaching an audio production class using Soundtrap, which is, like, an online DAW. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was like, I had to come up with a full-on lesson plan from, like, beginning of the school year to the end of the school year. And granted, it was only one class that I was teaching, but I definitely learned a lot about, like, music in general, and especially because, like, I took audio production my last year of college. That's funny. Using what is that?
Pro Tools?
What do they use on
FL Studio?
I used FL Studio outside of school, which was goddamn nightmare. Logic. Logic, yes. I used Logic in college, yeah. Ableton, definitely not. Could not get into that. But yeah, Logic was, like, what I focused on in college for my last year, and it was a really interesting experience learning about, like, all the different forms of, like, equalization, how, like, much of an emphasis, like, effects can really have, how expensive it can be also if you really wanted to, like, pursue that career. And
super expensive.
You know, it was definitely a really good experience for me to be able to teach the kids that, but also to like learn it as I'm teaching the kids too. It's just like, oh wow, I actually did not know that a feature could do that. So like, we're gonna try that and learn that in class today.
Nice. That's so awesome though.
But I do still have some of like my kids' music on a folder from the school year anyway.
You got some
like
bangers on the folder.
I don't know if I would call them bangers. They're middle schoolers, but hey, you know, shout out to my 8 middle school kids from when I used to teach last school year. They know who they are if they're listening. But yeah, it was really fun. It was really fun. I've started taking up piano again, which is something that I also learned in college taking up in college.
Okay.
Has been also a nightmare considering the fact that like, since my right hand has a broken pinky, like I guess whatever this part is from like finger bone, like knuckle to wrist, it's been really hard for me to try to like really articulate movements because of that. But it's also been really enjoyable to like get over that challenge and like learn different chords, kind of start from scratch and build my way back up to where I once was when I was in college anyway. So definitely really enjoyable. Music has been really, you know, a lifesaver for me, honestly, I would say, and also like a really big part of my life, especially as of late too. So
wow, that's dope. So wait, you broke your hand, and what did it grew back wrong? Like it wasn't reset.
So like, I'm trying to think, when did this happen? I think this happened in like 2018 or so when I was playing basketball. I had fallen on it like really bad, like one of those like bang, like and then when I went to the hospital, they were like, hey, your x-ray says your bones are like literally stuck like this inside of each other.
Oh wow.
So I had to get a cast. Yeah, they were literally like, one was like jutting through the other one basically. But it was like a splint fracture. It was like a splint broken bone anyways. But I had to wear a cast for literally I think like 2 to 3 months while it was healing. Wow. And I had to learn how to write left-handed also. A goddamn nightmare.
Same with me. When I broke my wrist when I was younger, and I had to write with my left. I mean, right hand writing was already trash, but still, it was super trash now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I had to learn how to write my left hand, and that was something. It was somewhat neat, oddly enough. I was like, oh, this is actually not that bad. I hate it, but it's not that bad.
Can you still write?
Can I still write with it? Somewhat. Like, very odd, but very, like, on the straight line sometimes, not all the time. But when I took off that cast, it was like my arm was completely disheveled. It was so skinny, and it was like a lizard's arm. I was like, you know, like,
yeah, it always looks weird.
Yeah, if you ever had a cast,
when they saw it open, it's like, ugh.
It's just like, ugh. I'm like, Deku's arm just like completely broken down.
I love that show too.
that was an interesting experience, but yeah, it's been like that ever since, and like it slowly started to heal. Like, it's definitely not like that anymore. It's a little bit flatter, but I can still feel like the ridges and like exactly where it's broken, which is like right here.
Oh yeah. My goodness. So,
basketball. I got some injuries. I got stitches in my leg from basketball. Like, goodness, some crazy shit.
Well, I imagine people like, because you're so tall, you're like what, 6'9"?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah,
wow. Okay. Yeah, I imagine people trying to like manhandle you to compensate for how tall you are. Yeah, it's like, it's not that serious.
It really is not that serious. Like, bro,
we're not getting a check 16. For this game.
Like, bro, we're staying in the hood, bro. Let's be real.
Ain't none of us making it out.
Let's enjoy what we hear.
Laying the LeBrons and LES. Be so for real.
Oh, like, hey, so you never real. Know. You never know.
Oh, I know. I know.
There's a Jalen Brunson somewhere.
Maybe.
How have you been though, Trent? How have you been?
I've been good. Just got back from Texas, visiting home. Yeah, and I'm in good spirits. Yeah, I can, you know, like I was telling you before we got on mic, I was approaching burnout, and it's always weird when you come back and you have that vacation high, and then you start dealing with New York shit, and it's like I can feel it.
Oh, you feel the deflation happening in real time. I can feel
like
the tension
easing back on me. It's like, damn, creeping back up. Yeah, yeah. Nah, because even just the train is such a weird place. I was on my way to work the other day, and this lady was, because I never sit on trains, so this lady was like, I always stand against either the back of the train where that door is, or against one of the doors. I get like a little spot next to the railing.
Mm-hmm.
But this lady was just standing there, and then a hot dog falls out of her dress. And it's not a full hot dog.
It's like a half eaten.
It's a quarter of a hot dog. No bun.
Oh,
it's like 25% of a glizzy. And I'm just looking at it. I'm like, so we're not going to acknowledge the food on the floor?
25%.
So, all right, cool.
Fall out the dress. On the train. That's crazy.
Wow.
That's wild. You really can see anything in New York these days, I feel.
Wow. Or like when on the way here, there was... Well, first, I knew it was going to be a while because the tweakers are out, apparently, on Sunday. Because, like, as soon as I get on the train, I'm listening to music, but, you know, I don't have it too loud.
Yeah.
This guy starts yelling. He's like, hey, hey. I pretend like I don't hear him because something feels off already.
Understandable.
He's wearing, like, really thin pants. And then
it's 30 degrees, but it's 20. Real feel 20.
I start nodding my head, letting, like, so people can visibly see I'm listening to music. Yeah. And then he just puts his hands in his pants, and I'm like, all right. Because I'm watching him from, you know, the reflection. And then this really tall white guy gets on, right? Mm-hmm. And he sits down, and he's, like, looking around. Like, he has the same pattern when he looks. He looks directly at me. And I'm like kind of diagonal to the right from him, and he looks directly to the right. Then he looks to the left, and then he pulls out like a little monocle, and he's like looking at something with tweezers. And I'm like, oh shit! Like I see these white things in his hand. I was like, is he inspecting diamonds on the train? I was like, yo, you may not want to do that. Yeah. Like I see it. Yeah. And he's like looking, and then he's looking at me. Looks to the right. Looks to the left.
Oh my goodness!
And so he's like. Fucking with the tweezers. I'm like, can he not pick those off his hand? Turns out there's like something growing off of his hand that he's picking at. Something white. I have no clue what it is. What? At one point, he pulls out scissors and starts. And I'm like, all right, that's gross. Yeah. Yeah. So that's my train ride here. Like, it was so weird. I'm like, wow. Man. New York is definitely a different planet.
New York is its own server.
Oh my goodness.
Yo.
And then a three-quarters glizzy. I fell out of Trent's shirt right now. Yeah. As we speak.
Like, no buns, ketchup, son.
No buns.
It's like, I don't want to finish it. I'm just going to. I'm going to put it in my dressing and it falls where it falls.
Okay, I'm going to save this for you.
I have no buckets. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. All right,
so her pocket than her purse, I feel.
Yeah. Maybe. Oh my god. So we go get into the subject.
New me
of
is
the
a glizzy glop over.
No, I can't stop thinking about it. All right, so we go get into today's topic. All right. So folks, we're talking about safe spaces. Excuse me, I didn't mean to do that in the mic. and what I mean when I say safe space, I know it's one of those words that's kind of become a big part of the cultural zeitgeist. And you know, there's a lot of connotations that gets thrown around with it that are connected to it. So when I say safe spaces, I mean a place where we can be our purest of selves without, threats of violence or harm or judgment or persecution. And I think one of the biggest things is there was a, I'm not going to say his name because I'm not going to give him any shine. There was a figure who kind of, he got big during COVID, and he was sort of his number one, I guess, criticism of safe space is that it doesn't allow for any, intellectual growth because it lacks the, you, when you're in a safe space, you lack the ability to be challenged. And I completely disagree with that. I think that a safe space definitely has, as a matter of fact, a safe space should be a place to grow and you should be challenged, but there's a certain way to challenge someone in a safe space. You know, there are ways to go about it. So, you know, moving further, do you guys have anything to add on to that definition before we start?
I think a safe space can be both physical and communal. So, you know, any room could be a safe space with like a certain amount of people, like your community or your group is a safe space, and then you can have a meeting place that's a safe space.
Yeah.
So I think sometimes when you deal with the word safe spaces, space can be a connotation of like a physical environment, but also just like a feeling as well. And I think that's important as we kind of go further in the discussion for me as part of the definition.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and definitely branching off of that, I feel like safe spaces doesn't always have to be like a 3D like space that you're in or like people that you're with. It could be like a song that you're listening to that makes you feel safe and comfortable or whatever emotion it is that you need to feel in that moment anyways, which is why a lot of people end up going back to the same song consistently because it's a safe space for them. Or, you know, picking up hobbies that could be considered a safe space where it's like it could be any form of art, any form of like going to the gym. Some people find the gym as a safe space anyway. Mm-hmm. Some people find like the feeling of going to the gym as a safe space. Some people find working out as it doesn't always have to be like a physical entity or like a physical space that you're in. Like it could be a feeling, it could be a form of like expression, it could be a form of just being anyways too. So I think that's like my input going into it.
Oh, nice.
I think so, everybody covered everything pretty well.
Yeah, no. That's perfect. That's perfect. Y'all so, what do you guys' safe spaces look like? Like, who are those safe spaces for y'all? If I'm, I mean, I don't mind going first.
Yeah, you can go first.
Okay. So, I kind of have, when I was thinking about it, I have sort of two categories that I kind of separated in. Now, they're not like concretely separate. Yeah. It's kind of adding on to my little intro or whatever. There's a sort of static nature safe space, and then there's sort of a dynamic nurture kind of safe space. And when I say that, what I mean is like there are spaces that just sometimes just allow you to be, you know, and you don't really have to do much. You can just be you. And I experienced that so much when I was in Texas, when I was with my family. So we had like a little sleepover, right? Mm-hmm. And it was like my my brother, my sister, my mom, my nieces and my nephews, my great nieces and nephews. And we played games and we sang karaoke. And I was just kind of like, it was so freeing. I didn't have to think about, you know, where I was going to be living in the next 6 months. You know, how am I gonna make rent? How am I gonna pay for this? None of that was there. Nobody expected me to be anything but what I was. And that was like perfect. Like that kind of evened me out from everything that I was going through. And that's what I mean by like static or nature. You know, you're there and you can be. It's almost like a nostalgia.
Yeah.
You know, you can kind of live in something and exist as maybe what you once were or what people used to see you as. And you know, that was like 9-year-old Trent. Nobody expected me to be anything but goofy, weird Trent, you know? And then there are the dynamic sort of nurture safe spaces or safe spaces that sort of let you be you, but it's there for you to heal, if that makes sense. Like I think of stuff like that, like therapy or this, when we do this, you know, I grow and learn so much from being here. Like those are sort of the categories. So I would say this podcast is definitely a safe space for me, but shouts out to Dr. Ward, my former therapist. She was definitely a safe space for me to be and grow. And that was definitely one where I was challenged a lot. You know, but it never felt like it was a challenge. It was a challenge in a way to sort of poke at me or prove me wrong. It was a challenge to look deeper and to question things, you know, for me to search for my own answers.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's what's in, that's very important for safe space. Like I said, there's a lot of overlap because sometimes a lot of those old friends, you can have those conversations and then that'll sort of push you forward to grow and learn as well. But yeah, gentlemen, please.
Yeah, for me, I think my friends are my safe space for real.
Mm-hmm.
but for my friends, like they always push me, they always give me like a lot of support and they do challenge me in like a lot of ways. Like I was at a birthday dinner yesterday and I was talking to my friend Michael. Shout out Michael. Reaching like a 10 years plus of friendship.
That's what's up. That's beautiful.
But yeah, he was I was talking to him about just my ideas and just being able to just be myself and just be understood. And I feel like being understood is a part of a lot of safe spaces and just wanting to find a connection, understanding, and do that in a secure and like stable space, like in a stable environment. Mm-hmm. To kind of piggyback off of that, I feel like statically, as I kind of grew older, I found that, you know, my mind was like a nice safe space. So trying to get it so, not so that you disassociate, but just so that you can kind of just quiet your thoughts and not really have to deal with anxiety in that type of way. Mm-hmm. And just discovering different tools. So when I go to therapy, I do like, I have like tool exercises that like get rid of like anxiety. And then also just like from doing martial arts used to be my safe space for real.
Yeah.
So as I was like on my path to like my black belt and everything, I was just really happy to just be able to kind of find that zen. And even sparring, when you're in the middle of like in the middle of like motion with somebody else, just very you know, when you're in rhythm, for me, is like when you're in your safe space, which is kind of why I kind of like music too, because it's like a safe space in that way, because it's mind and rhythm together. Yeah. It's like a synthesis of the two for me. Mm-hmm. So I think it's that, friends, family for sure, like family gatherings, any type of gatherings of this long relatives that you haven't seen in a time, it feels like a checkpoint in life. And just having more checkpoints is just important. Mm, but like what do you mean?
excuse me. I feel like for me, when it comes to safe spaces, like I definitely find my mom and my younger sister to be my safe spaces, especially because like my younger sister, she's going to college pretty soon actually. And you know, my mom's been there for me literally like my entire life. There's never, you know, been an instance where she wasn't there or she, like she wasn't around. So I've always felt, you know, as long as she's around that like I can feel safe, and as long as like I'm within her space, she can feel safe. So I definitely find a lot of comfort and, you know, safety and being myself whenever she's around or whatever, like I'm around her, like even just casual conversation or, you know, telling her about like an accomplishment at work or whatever the case may be. It's like, she's the first person I go to whenever it comes to something that good happened in my life anyway. Yeah. So, I find safety and comfort in being able to do that. I also find safety and comfort in my job currently, where I work at now anyways.
Yeah.
Where I used to work at last year, I didn't really feel as comfortable or appreciated where with what I was doing for not only like the school itself, but like for the kids too. Mm-hmm. And over time, like I worked at that job for literally like 7 years since I was 17 years old. Like I started as an internship and worked my way up to like teacher's assistant, then coach, and so on and so forth up until teaching my own class. But all throughout those 7 years, it didn't really feel like I was like welcomed or didn't really feel like I was kind of like wanted from like when I first started there. Anyways, yeah, it was kind of just like a lingering feeling of like dread sometimes. And so I took a pretty big leap and started sending out some applications. A lot of places got back to me, but I ended up taking the one place that I work at now anyways. And it definitely for me was like a little bit scary because I was so comfortable in that space. Like yeah, I was so comfortable at that job, and I was like, I don't know what's going to happen once I leave here. And that was one of like my biggest fears, as like, what's going to happen when I leave here? Like, am I going to be okay? Am I going to be taken care of? Am I going to be, you know, liked at my new job? Am I going to be able to actually do my new job to like completion? And, you know, once I took that big leap and I said, fuck it, you know, why not at this point? I ended up getting there, and at first it was a little bit shaky. You know, you're the new person there. Everybody already has like their own built relationships. Yeah,
everybody's
so why not?
Established.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, like they already have their own lore. everybody has their own, you know, like little quest line that they completed.
Yeah.
But over time, I started to like really establish myself as like, you know, being myself as opposed to like putting on like a persona to kind of appease and please people. And over time, people really started to gravitate towards me. People started to, you know, appreciate me. People started to like give me a lot more responsibilities. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it showed not only through my cadence and how I talk to people and how I work with people, but it also showed through like how I treat the kids and how I do my job overall, which is why I got Rookie of the Fall. So shout out to my boss for...
That's such a tough name, too.
Yeah. shout outs to my boss for... I forget what the word is. Like, I don't want to say partition. Yeah, nominate. I was going to say partition, but that would have been the completely wrong word. Then I guess my last safe space is Monster Hunter. Like, I don't know if you guys play Monster Hunter, but as much as that game really gets under my skin, especially with Rajang, who always just manages to beat me to a bloody pulp and I fail three times over and over again, it's still like one of the few games that I find like the most comfort in playing from like start to finish. I can like put hours on hours into the game just farming, gathering materials, trying new play styles and things like that. And it's like, I started playing from DS and PSP probably. Shout outs to Sony PSP if anybody played that.
Yeah, throwback.
Super throwback. started playing from PSP and now I play on PC and I've loved the journey and I'm excited for Monster Hunter Wilds to come out next year too.
Yes.
Gonna pre-order it. Definitely gonna pre-order it.
No, that's crazy though, because that's one of the things I wrote down too. Like a big safe space for me is online gaming with my friends. Like, no, lately we've been into Apex.
That's fire though.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to be an Apex fan right now, but it's all good. Oh, yeah. It's all good. But you know, it's not so much the game. I really love the game. Like, I love playing it, but it's just the people. It's like I'm able to be, even though, you know, all of my good friends are in Texas, I'm able to be in a way in a room with them and we can just sit and talk shit, whether we're winning or losing. You know, it's always something interesting with them and we can catch up. You know, we can throw out old jokes that no one outside of the group is gonna get, you know. And it's a good break from the day to day in New York to be able to experience that with them. So no, shout out to that. But quick question. So if you don't mind me asking, what about your old job made you feel like it wasn't, was it a situation where it felt safe at first and then as it went on it kind of had to back up and be like, I'm not really feeling this?
I feel like for me it was like it felt safe at first because the person that got me into the school was still working at the school, and like I definitely grew like a strong attachment to him because not only did he help me like get into college with like application things like that, but he was just overall like a really helpful person throughout like my entirety of working there. But when he left, then I ended up having to kind of like float on my own, if that makes sense, anyways, and navigate through. And as I was navigating through with my own lens, it was just like, I can see why we're so different, because it's a school, you know, like Upper East Side. Definitely different dynamic, definitely a different vibe overall. And I feel like over time I was just not necessarily like wanted by specific people there, whereas the other people that were there that could appreciate me were the ones that appreciate me the most. So, and even though, like, you know, I did a lot for the kids, and even though I did a lot for like the job in general, it just felt like it was never really like overall appreciated.
Yeah,
you know. And I figured that because of that dynamic, I wanted to try something new. And I said, you know, let me go where I feel like I could be the most appreciated at. And ever since I made that leap, I've been fine.
That's good, though. It's good that, like, you're able to kind of grow from it. And I think, you know, given that initially, like, the lens was kind of skewed because you had at least, like, a good figurehead of, like, somebody that's, like, a watchful eye. And it's really like when you, it's kind of like an allegory for life. Like, when you're on your own, you realize like certain environments that you kind of thought were cool were no longer, you grow from it, and then you move to a new place and it's kind of like a new status quo type of thing. And that's been like the consistent theme of the season, like starting something new that's like different for you and really like truly experiencing and like just growing from that. And no, it's really cool that you found your new environment. You went through like the growing pains of it, and you were able to help a lot of people on the way. Yeah, that too.
Yeah, definitely. Like helping people is one of the biggest things that like I focus my life on. Even if like sometimes I may not be the most forward about it, I do try to do things like I see somebody having a really bad day, I try to like joke around until like, you know, they chuckle at one joke. I'm like, yes,
got him.
Yes, got him.
That's a win, people. That's
yeah, exactly.
A win.
That's a win in my book. All right, see you later.
Hit the showers.
Locker room. But yeah, definitely helping people is like one of my biggest things, especially now, because I know what it's like to not be helped and like,
yeah, oh, absolutely
trying to break generational curses.
Yes. And that's funny that you say that, because I felt like, you know, at the place we met at that we used to work, I had, yes, for those that don't know, it's like, but no, I just like doing that.
Always funny.
I think, because, you know, it's a very, it attracts a lot of young people. It's, you know, you get in quick. It's a lot of it's easy to learn.
Yeah.
It's actually lower paying now,
which is crazy to me.
Which is super crazy, but
I
felt like being there, and you guys can tap into this too. Being there allowed me to be a safe space for people, because a lot of people felt like I was. I guess some people refer to me as like the good cop of management, or you know, or I was very neutral. Yeah. But that's just like that's the type of person I am. I allow people to be themselves, you know, and if I can help them, yeah. But sometimes all people need to do is listen. And people told me a lot of things. I'm not gonna put anybody on blast. There's like somebody that didn't work there long. Yeah, I'm not. All right, I'm just gonna cut it off right there. But yeah, like I heard some wild things. But the thing is, like I'm not. Like, that's the type of person I am. If you tell me something in confidence, I'm not going to tell anybody.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, it's, you know, your secrets are always safe with me. If you just need to get it off your chest, then go. And that's, honestly, that's one thing I miss about it. Like, I miss a lot of the different personalities there, because as rowdy as they were, they're all special in their own way.
Yeah, you know? 100%.
And like I met so many dope people there, and it sucks to not be able to be there for people, because I know that a job like that, like even with life, you know, on top of that sandwich, you know, of having people come through and yell at you because they felt like they paid for something different or whatever, you know, it's something, there's something special about having somebody that you can go to and be like, yo, I just need I need to say this right here. Mm-hmm. And it's like, cool, I need like 10 minutes to chill, or I need this, or I'm having this problem, you know, because a lot of people don't have that. And that's why when you told me that you were teaching, I was like, yo, that's so dope, because yeah, it would be such a great person for something like that, like, mm-hmm. to be someone's safe space. And I think that it's important that not only to have safe spaces, but to be safe spaces for people.
Yeah.
I don't know. But
yeah.
Yeah. For me, I think, honestly, the counter to a lot of safe spaces is just like a really like hostile environment. And I feel like just,
Oh, you mean the city of New York?
I mean, even if you were to bring it to that level, a lot of spaces are not designed to be like beneficial for people. Like even for, you know, if you look around, like, we don't live in a natural world anymore. Like, we live in a human-made world. So that means, like, some type of human intelligence from any point in time had to design it. It's not like you make roads as soon as you're a baby. Like, you have to inherit it. So a lot of the things that we inherit, we don't really realize that we take it for granted. And then we don't really truly, like, reassess how it affects like how we deal with things. So the city is like branded as like, oh, it's a hustle and bustle type of culture. But even in the design of the city, like, you know, subway seats have hostile architecture so that you don't sit on the thing, mm-hmm. or that pigeons don't even sit. Like, and it's just so crazy, because like for example, like the pigeon used to be like a coveted bird that used to send our messages, and then we evolved past it, and then, you know, it became a nuisance. Yeah. And as soon as you, you know, dictated that this became a nuisance, it lost its value. And mm-hmm. so you built a part of that. And then even the people's connotations of what, you know, a pigeon is just a sky rat now.
yeah.
And
yeah.
it's just like, you know, that used to be what people used to like tend to and care for. And I think when you are designing your own sphere, open space, or if you yourself are like open space and confidence to other people, it's just an important thing in general to kind of keep in mind, like, you know, how much am I giving myself away in this kind of process? How much am I giving myself to this process? How am I creating a safe space without the detriment of all parties and making sure that I'm okay at the end of it too? Because mm-hmm. even with the design of like schools, the you know, the administration doesn't really face the brunt of the student body. They have different tasks. So, like, the teachers end up taking a lot of stuff. And I remember mm-hmm. being a kid and seeing, like, the teachers. Some teachers would go out and complain about how they had to buy all their supplies.
Yeah.
And how, like, they can't facilitate, like, 32 kids. And then some of them themselves had kids that were going to school. Mm-hmm. And it's just, like, it was just a kind of like clash of like wanting to be more safe spaces for more kids and only being able to do so much. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important in the discussion of open, like kind of like environments and safe spaces, because a lot of it boils down to design. What kind of levers are you kind of pushing in your design of your space? And yeah, like you said, the city of New York, over the years, it's been designed this way. To kind of like the reason why we have no loitering laws or no loitering signs is just to make it so that it appears that everybody's just moving, or because yeah. it's not really
or for certain groups to feel more comfortable.
Yeah, you know? So it's like the prioritization of certain groups above others, and also, you know, there's no there's a lot of conversation about the lack of third spaces as open as spaces of. You know, comfort, community. There's a lot of, there's not really a profit incentive to have a lot of third spaces in the same way that you used to have it. Mm-hmm. And so, like, a lot of that is kind of disappearing. And so, like, the few kind of, you know, times that you can interact with people that are not from your typical circles and everything are just very limited, especially mm-hmm. in the city where everybody's not even supposed to loiter or move about. And, you know, even like rebellious things, like let's say for instance skateboarding was like a huge type of thing to like hostile architecture and everything to make mm-hmm. it so that certain rails were certain lengths and whatever, and it became a thing where, you know, you can't fight fire with fire, so, you know, you just fight fire with water, so you create your own skate, so then you invest in maybe having like skate parks and everything for people. And then in that, you only put it in specific areas, and now you just create a culture that just kind of, you know, puts a little barrier on like the mm-hmm. little acts of rebellion that you have, and then you lose out on a safe space in that regard. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I feel like safe spaces are a combination of people and a combination of power in the way that it kind of impresses itself in an environment. And it's very important to look at your environment and evaluate it and look into yourself and see, like, how much of it did I inherit and then how much of it can I, like, do to supersede it?
No, that's very interesting. Yeah, no, I agree. A lot of safe spaces have been shuffled away for the idea of efficiency. And also, you may be... You made me think of talking about schools. We're revolving around schools a lot tonight. the idea of standardized testing, you know, it's that also plays into the idea of efficiency. Mm-hmm. You know, it becomes, as opposed to about people, about the kids, just about numbers and funding. And that's so, I don't know, I was always, like, being in school, I was always frustrated with that. If you've never seen The Wire, please check out The Wire, the fourth season of The Wire. They talk about that. Perfectly. A lot of questions, never really a lot of answers. But no, I'm not gonna go into a tangent. What's going on? What you thinking, Garrett?
I definitely think for like going back to the idea of like schools and offering safe spaces in schools too. Like I feel like there's not many teachers that show that they care about their kids, especially nowadays. And because of that, they're really only focused on like their statistics and like their class passing, as opposed to like their class's well-being while they're passing. And because of that, there's so many kids that end up like completely resenting school because of that, and like really not getting the full nurturing environment there, especially considering that sometimes home is not a safe space, and sometimes kids make their school a second home because that's the only place that they can feel safe, which is why
I can speak to that.
You know, a lot of kids find themselves in after school because home sometimes isn't safe past a certain hour, or some kids find themselves doing extracurriculars because that's their only way to take out like whatever frustration, or like just feel comfortable in a space wherever where they can just be themselves. Mm-hmm. And even though, you know, where I teach it, a lot of the time it's like really, you know, class driven, like, you know, teach. There's still moments where like the kids can be children, and giving them the chance to be children ultimately is like one of the biggest things that a lot of kids in many places don't have, because they're forced to grow up so quickly in these environments because of how fast paced everything is. They lose out on, you know, emotional growth. They lose out on like mental fortitude. They don't even really get the chance to like form bonds because of how quick some things are happening. And because like you said, you know, standardized testing and efficiency, it really revolves more so around the concept of like, let's get these numbers to show like we're doing good.
And even with the idea of like social promotion.
Exactly.
Just like passing just the pass.
Exactly. Yeah. Especially with like the No Kid Left Behind thing that's happening in New York now. It's like, and pretty much in all of the DOE, it's like, even if the kid is really just not ready to go on and not mentally there, they're still going to pass them on. Like getting left back is no longer something that's like done too frequently these days because of that. And it's really unfortunate that you have a lot of like teenagers that are just uneducated because they got passed along, as opposed to like literally saying, no, you need to do this again so you can really be ready for the next grade, and then understand like the next content, and then go on from there. So,
absolutely, because if someone is having trouble, clearly there's a problem that needs to be addressed.
There's a gap, exactly.
Yeah, and as opposed to addressing it, we're just gonna push you along so it can become someone else's problem.
Exactly. Yeah. And between that, it, like the prison, like the school to prison pipeline, I don't know what's worse, because sometimes they end up in prison because of like the No Kid Left Behind, but at the same time, it's like, is that pushing to the school to prison pipeline that was once established way back when? So it's like, it's pretty shoddy, and all you can do, especially like for myself, is just do what you can for the kids while you're there.
Yeah, I feel like to kind of comment on like the school to prison pipeline and like, you know, the No Kid Left Behind type of thing. I feel like a lot of the inequities and the things that we have in education are very reflective of like the susceptibility to certain tactics that the American population can have just in general. Mm-hmm. So like maybe the lack of media literacy, or just incentives that make it so that, you know, it's more incentive for a person to grow up faster in a world where efficiency is needed, because, you know, you need to be efficient, be able to contribute to a society to achieve like infinite type of growth type of thing. Mm-hmm. And in that, you kind of lose out on the bonds, the safe spaces. And like you said earlier, which I can speak to a lot, like school for me, especially in high school, was like a big safe space. Like, it ended up being a case that I got the school award because I was in a lot of different clubs. I would do a lot of different things in school. Mm-hmm. And for me, when I received the award, it wasn't something I was intentionally working on. It was something that I saw as like a defense mechanism. And as a defense mechanism, it was just like, I'd rather be in this space than be at home. And in doing that, I was able to achieve and make my spaces better than make the most out of the space. And if you're operating off of that kind of defense mechanism, defense mechanisms not only facilitate towards the positive, but towards the negative.
Absolutely.
So even if it's, you know, getting passed along, you can have a thing where maybe instead of getting passed along, the alternative would be dropping out and going straight there faster. Mm-hmm. But then when you just get passed along, you know that the bare minimum is okay. So the alignment of like incentives doesn't really change depending on that. And the core of the issue is that, you know, the issue is more societal. Why is that home not safe? Why is it like this? What are the inherited traits that cause that not to be a safe space? How is their home design? How is it set up like that? Like, I was having a conversation with, it's a slight tangent, but I was having a conversation with my coworker, and he was talking about how, like, you know, LA, you know, the population is pretty healthy. And then he put it over here and I was like, you know what? People are always walking here. People are pretty healthy considering. And I was just like, yeah, but a lot of places tend to have internally a lot of issues, like stomach issues, a lot of things, asthma and things of that nature, from, you know, the way that the city is set up and the way that there's a lot of food deserts, or Lower East Side has the big Con Edison plant that pumps a lot of things, so there's a higher chance of asthma. Like, I don't have asthma in my side, but my aunt and my cousins have asthma because they grew up in Lower East Side and stood in Lower East Side,
mm-hmm.
while my grandparents went to Long Island. And if you look at the history of that, that plays into a lot of safe spaces catering to specific populations, mm-hmm. and safe spaces catering to specific people and prioritizing certain things and certain functions in this design inherently, and how that kind of plays with safe spaces and, you know, person-to-person type of safe spaces,
mm-hmm.
and how, you know, a person-person type safe space can only offer so much when the basis of the problem is, like, you're trying to make people your safe space when your environment is really toxic. And there's, like, a joy and a beauty in that, that no matter how hostile that environment, a person can always kind of thrive and facilitate life. Mm-hmm. But it comes into question on a society level, how much of that can we change within the communities that we build?
I feel like you always have these moments during the episodes where you'll say something and then it'll get quiet because everybody's thinking about what you're saying. I love it though. I love your tangents.
Hey, I gotta stick to the name Sage.
No, straight up, damn. I was gonna say something when I lost my train of thought listening to you, but that's a good thing. So then I guess that sort of beckons the question, how do we move forward and create more safe spaces? Like, what's the...
I think the best way to change or to make something that is completely new is to change and align the incentives so that, you know, it's like putting certain guardrails for certain kind of functions in the inverse. So if you know that whatever you do is going to create a scenario where somebody's going to try to section you off,
mm-hmm.
then try to make it so that if that's going to be the case, then before you get sectioned off, cause as much damage as possible.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Right? So that the scope of the problem has to kind of outsize that. Now, it's not like, you know, skateboard everywhere and that type of thing. But it's more of like really attack the core function in what the space is offering. And it's just like small, like little ways. So, like, you know, making art out of like hostile environments is in itself a very beautiful way to discover things, because, you know, the nature of graffiti and the way that it populated the city and the way that it created a space, and for a point of time until it was like very co-opted by like different establishments and just seen as a thing, for a point of time it was very expansive, but in the nature of graffiti comes the spirit of hip hop, which expands and breaks and trends. But that was like one of the core foundations of having that art form in the beginning. One of the four elements of it. And maybe that element has been co-opted, but, you know, the culture or the ideologies that you push in that way have been moved forward. And a lot of my ideas are kind of like, you know, creating schools of thought. And, you know, not necessarily the original form of thought would supersede and create the safe spaces on its own, but it'll push the needle a little bit further so that somebody can have a better idea in their lifetime, because we're kind of limited to 100 and some years, maybe very luckiest. But everything's inherited. It's like the roads, it's like the things, you know, you don't come out of baby paving roads. So
yeah, you gotta
inherit. So you gotta give something to inherit to somebody that gets you closer to where you want to be. And I think people already do that, just by person to person safe spaces. And I think always questioning, always challenging, always constantly trying to figure out the why, and then asking the why to the why, I think is the best way to make a safe space, because it addresses not only the person, like, why do kids need a safe space? It gets to the core of, like, okay, maybe their home life is like that, but why? Well, because you know, their parent has to work a double shift because
shouts out to the city of New York.
Yeah, they have to work a double shift, and, like, you know, they're a firefighter, and and they're not at home that often. So like, they find their solace in the school.
Yeah,
and it's just like that gives you a more complete picture. And now it's something that, you know, this person's a firefighter, this person's a firefighter, or this person has like a firefighter family background, and this one has a family member that's a nurse. Maybe I can get them to be friends and they can relate to a lot of each other. So you can facilitate connections that wouldn't have originally be there.
Absolutely.
And like you said, this podcast is a safe space. I would have never met you in that instance, but you facilitated a safe space that I can go on to contact you and I can have conversations. Now that expands my network of people. And so a lot of it is just facilitating community in very organic ways. Like, I wouldn't have met you if Lucas was in a safe space for me.
Yeah.
And then I would have been able to have environments and doing that and just understanding the butterfly effects of that.
Absolutely. Sir Gaddius, how do we go about creating more safe spaces and places for people that are in need to be fulfilled?
I think a lot of it is also just being able to be yourself and people being able to reflect over that. They're like, oh, yeah, if this person is like being wholly like no mask guard, no like bullshit, no facade or anything like that, they're able to say, like, maybe I can do that and I can attract other people that are similar to me in my nature of being myself or being themselves, whatever the case may be. But also, like you said, like building connections and like bridging, you know, interpersonal relationships with other people. Like, for me, I find that, you know, my kids have definitely bonded to me this school year. And as you know, I only just started in August, anyways, but like, my kids have definitely like grown a huge attachment to me. And like, they'll, during after school, they'll ask to follow me around the school, whatever the case may be. Or like, one of the kids, whose name I won't say for, you know, child safety, he definitely has like not really the best place at home in regards to like a male figure at times, so he really has gravitated towards me in that instance. And like, you know, he's adapted quite a bit of like respect and like, you know, cadence when it comes to like carrying himself and like being like a role model in general. And overall, I definitely feel like for me, not only being like myself to my coworkers, but to my kids, or, well, yeah, not really being myself to my coworkers, but also to my kids, has opened up a lot of doors for people to say, like, you know, it's okay to just be you. You know, you don't really have to, like, put on any mask, or, like, you don't have to really put on any facade to, like, appease and, like, treat other people, like, treat people in a way that you would want to be treated, but not actually, like, have the proper, what's the word I'm looking for? The proper... it's like right on the tip of my tongue. I guess ideation behind it, like the proper meaning, like meaning to go about it or reasoning to go about it. Like if you're just doing it just to appease people, as
opposed like the
to
proper like, intention.
Exact intention. Yeah, gotcha, gotcha. I was like, I know it begins with an I. I was gonna say intuition, but but like the proper intentions behind it, in regards to, you know, why you do the things that you do and why you do, why you are the way that you are. It's like, you're going to forever be behind, hiding behind that mask, and nobody's ever going to be able to see the true you because you're constantly doing things that are like to appease other people, as opposed to saying, you know what? Yeah, this is exactly who I am. If I'm a cunt, I'm a cunt. If like, I'm a cool guy, I'm a cool guy. If people can gravitate towards like my weird sense of humor, then you can gravitate towards my weird sense of humor. Like, as long as you're being yourself, other people will gravitate towards you in that nature. And regardless or not, if you, you know, enjoy that person and who they are, or you don't, you know, at least they were able to open up and be that, like, feel safe around you to be able to be themselves. And I find that a lot of people, especially my coworkers now who I work with, are definitely like able to confide in me with a lot of things and be able to speak to me about things that are like, you know, a little bit abstract. I have a few work best friends.
Shouts out to the work best friends.
Yeah, man.
Shouts out to the work best friends. My boss, she loves me. My other boss, she also loves me, but I know she'd be getting, to know me too. But I know they both do. Yeah, they always come to my class and like, Mr. Brown, like,
what are you doing? What are you, again?
Like, no, literally, they're like, what are you doing? I'm just like, I'm sorry. Like, I'm trying to do better. It's my first. It's literally my first year. Like, it's literally my first year. But I think also with like, with going about that, it's like always being able to change whenever you need to, and like understanding that sometimes change can really hurt, or like sometimes growth can hurt too. But if you stay stagnant with yourself, then you're doing yourself a disservice, and you're still hiding behind that mask of like comfort. Because if you're not able to grow past who you once were like a few years ago, then like you're still hiding behind that mask, as opposed to being your true self and who you feel like you should be and who you feel like you should be now. So
Why do you think people have masks?
I feel like people have masks because they're uncomfortable with themselves. And I know for me, I definitely had a mask on for like a majority of college, where I didn't really feel comfortable with myself and being able to express who I truly was. So it was definitely just like very stoic, very like, I don't want to say mysterious, but very like to myself. And a lot of people were just like, that's kind of weird. Yeah. But at the same time, I was like, this is who I feel like I should be right now, as opposed to like who I am at home. And, you know, growing out of that and growing comfortable with being like with just myself and being like comfortable with myself, it's like, it was a hard and hurtful journey too. But at the same time, I'm glad that I was able to like go upon it, because I really feel like if I didn't, then I would still be who I was when I was like 21, 22. And not really being able to grow from that time, looking back on it now, would have definitely not done me any service today. So,
why do you think, it's a,
I'm sorry, people, I keep stretching out and I'm kicking this damn chain. I'm sorry. I'm like, apologizing to the listeners.
I know.
It's like, it's not the bucket we live in.
Is there MMA going on in the background? What's happening in this episode?
There's always something in the background.
Hello, walking. Rearranging furniture.
We exist in a context. No coconuts falling here.
But no, I'm sorry. You were asking questions.
Yeah. I was going to say, why do you think, knowing that, we're establishing like why people tend to hide behind the masks, because they're not comfortable with themselves. And why do you think people from like that sense of discomfort kind of like dive into like a mask in the sense? And how does that relate to how someone may initially dive into safe spaces, and how, what is the best way to interact with a safe space?
I feel like a lot of that is also because like from young, they're not taught to be comfortable with themselves, or like, unfortunately something happened to where they couldn't be comfortable with themselves. And like, because of that, they end up hiding behind, you know, whatever few masks they may be able to have and shuffle between like friend group to friend group, parent to parent, sibling to sibling, you know, house to house, house to school, whatever the case may be. And because of that, it's also in regards to how a lot of them are raised too. Like if they're not raised to like you know, teach right from wrong about their own body and about like how they should feel and about how other people should treat their body. Mm-hmm. And also if like they have parents who are just so resentful to where like there's malicious intent towards even having a kid sometimes, it's just, yeah. It just builds and breeds that, you know, masked culture where, you know, they feel comfortable being this persona or whatever the case may be. Like it could be a superhero that maybe they really gravitate towards, or it could be a person on TV, or it could be a person in a video game, whatever the case may be. But like they adapt traits and attributes from all these things that they find to be comfortable for themselves and then turn that into their mask. And then based off of how that mask is perceived, they then take other things from that safe space and then apply that to their mask so they can be, you know, perceived and, I guess, introduced into that safe space without judgment, if that makes sense. So it's like they can still be like who they are behind the first mask, but then also be behind, like be who they are behind the safe space mask too, while retaining who they truly are anyways.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really interesting because I was, I think I talked about it a little bit last episode, but I think I mentioned Society of the Spectacle or The Nature of Images. I'm not 100% sure if I did, but I've been playing around with that idea. And essentially, I'll probably say his name incorrectly, but Guy Debord, or he was a French philosopher, and he talks about how images in society play a huge part into, you know, sense of identity, the way that things function. And, you know, the concept of the mask is very similar to just, you know, taking images and trying to find your identity very externally and the sense of self. And I think you were touching on a point of like a lot of it is either stemming from, you know, a sense of ignorance or a sense of shame from an event that was very traumatic, or, you know, an initial trauma that kind of reinforces or enforces how they view themselves and view the world around them. And it's also like important to acknowledge that like just living the sense of life as a human being is very strange, like coming into it. And so like I think we, when you look at life as just being a very strange thing and then you're trying to understand it for your first terms, and then especially with like middle school, which like you said, it was like a weird middle ground, yeah. Where the more autonomy you get, the more you are in control of your capacity for an object where you feel like there's no rules or no sense of limit. And so you're trying to kind of gauge where your design ends, where, how expansive you truly are, how that is set. And then you also have, you know, that kind of recoil function for safety. Absolutely. And that retreat. And so like, it plays a huge part into that as well. And you touched on something earlier as well with trying to be like a male role model. And I guess I wanted to kind of offer what safe spaces are to you guys as men or male identifying people. Mm-hmm. And how that influences like how you go about safe spaces. And I guess I'll start first and everything, because I think safe spaces, and particularly in the culture that we are in now, is often denied by male figures, especially in the podcast sphere. Mm-hmm. And it's always seen as like, oh, this is a liberal type of thing, or like a leftist leaning type of idea. And realistically, it's a why to a why. Why is that the case that, you know, a male person would feel very abhorrently to having a safe space or having a space to execute like vulnerability? Mm-hmm. And why is vulnerability not incentivized? And how do you, coming from like backgrounds where, you know, men are not supposed to act like this, how, or I'm sure everybody in their life, especially as a boy, has heard that. Like, I know for me, as for a fact, I've heard that. But in the quest of that, you know, you made it to this point today where you can like be like, I can be the safe space for people. I can be that point of comfort because I've experienced that lack. How does somebody that is like uninitiated begin that process, in your opinion?
Did you want to go first? I have an answer. Like, I actually wrote something down.
Oh, that's fire.
It's crazy, but
I feel like with a lot of the concept of like masculinity and like how, quote unquote, fragile it can be sometimes for a lot of people in regards to the stigma and concept around it. There's a lot of men that just don't feel like they can really be their full selves because of that. It's like, I have to do these things based off of like what literally society says. And not to say that like that in a bad way or the case can be, but it's just like, that's just generally what happens. Like,
yeah,
you know, for me, I feel like there's certain roles that like I feel comfortable playing, but also there's certain roles that I don't feel comfortable playing because of like the stigmas, the concept and the, you know, way that it's been perceived through society. But also it's like, you know, male to male, it's like, what are you doing to try to like offer a sense of comfort for other people that may be in the same situation for you or like same situation as you? And like, what can you do overall to just be generally a better person, male, female, whatever the case may be, or male to male, male to female, male to whoever the case may be. But I just feel like it goes back to a lot of the fact that a lot of men just weren't really raised with that. And because of that, they just go out unguided and not really knowing what like what a safe space would look like, because they had to adapt to either being by themselves or like figuring it out for themselves, as opposed to like having somebody say like, you can be yourself, this is who you can be yourself with, and then try your best to just go about that, as opposed to picking things up that could be negatively influenced or negative connotations and going about that, as opposed to going about what you feel is morally right for yourself.
Yeah,
I agree. You know, it's funny. One of the first things I wrote down when I started thinking about this episode was a... back in October, I had a conversation with a young lady at Comic-Con, and a black woman, younger. I think she was early to mid-20s.
Shout out to black women.
Shout out to black women. Y'all are amazing. Give them a round of applause.
Yeah, 100%.
But she was kind of, like, I was working in the back, and I kind of overheard this conversation her and another black man was having, and she was saying that she doesn't date black men, and she prefers white men because black men aren't emotionally available. And, you know, I had my thoughts on that, but I chilled out. I kind of listened, and because the guy she was talking to, it was a little, you know, it was getting a little combative.
Yeah, he
did. And his point wasn't getting across. So when I saw my opportunity, I kind of jumped in, and I was like, hey, like, I get that, but. You know, keep in mind that you have to take into consideration, and it's all good. You can date who you want to date, love who you want to love. You know, whoever is your speed is your speed. But keep in mind when you're thinking about black men, think about all the stigmas and the limitations that have been downloaded on us, you know, since birth. You know, how many times have how many times have you been told to walk it off? How many times have you been told not to act like this because you'll be perceived a certain way? When you're in front of people, you know, you're a representative. You know, you have to always be a protector. You can't show vulnerability, because when you show vulnerability, you're going to be perceived as weak. And that's when people come after you.
The quote unquote fragile masculinity.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like, even with the police, it's the police. Why did I say it like that?
The police.
Yeah, even with the cops, you know, it's been circulating. But it's nothing new. Like, all the black men I know, you know, you have to have that conversation with your parents. Hey, you get pulled over, this is how you act, this is what you do, and this is what you don't do. And then even, I think it was one of the last episodes where we were talking about how black people were treated in the media.
Yeah.
How, you know, it took a while for us to get positive black images. You know, something that wasn't, you know, thugs, gangbangers, slaves. Like, it took a while for them to not just, you know, show that or that not. I mean, you know, there was a couple here and there, but now we're at a point to where those voices are starting to get through. That representation is starting to be a little bit broader, you know, and we're starting to get a little bit more colorful on screen. But I was trying to, back to Comic-Con, I was trying to sort of, you know, say, hey, like, I feel you. Like, you know, therapy is just something, like, even how we view therapy.
The stigma of therapy.
Yeah, it's like, yo, that used to be like, yo, you in therapy? Like, that's for crazy people. Yeah. Like, yo, what's good?
There's a lot of, like, distrust, especially in, for me, the Black community at large, because there have been multiple instances where, you know, behind the mask of society lays the facade that, you know, things are equal and equitable.
Absolutely.
And, you know, when you grow up, and you touched upon it last episode, like, you know, you would joke around with your friends on the playground, and then somebody would bring up time travel.
Yeah.
And then that's your first realization that, like, wow, it would be bad if I tried traveled, like, in genuine earnest, and not even, like, as a joke. It'll be really difficult to exist to time travel because you know the pain. And so it's like when you peel back the layers of, like, oh, this is tied to, like, an archetype, like, your favorite syrup. Like, people make jokes like, oh, man, Aunt Jemima was racist, too. Like, how was that? Like, how was that? That was just Pearl Millings? Like, But, like, it's just, like, wherever you look, it's, like, it's a sense of not feeling welcome, not feeling safe. And so,
it comes,
like,
from all sides.
And, like, it comes from all sides. So, you know, it prioritizes a kind of lone wolf culture of, like, the safest kind of place is myself. Because that's the place I could kind of retreat to. And a lot of people have different ways to retreat to it. Like, even myself, I said my safest space is my mind. Why? Because even if I look externally and I have friends around me, there is a space where, you know, it exists outside of, it's a liminal space. It's like a space that is not really, like, viewable and observable to other people. But in my experience, you know, I live within that. And from there, I can gauge and deal with different ideas, but there's healthy ways that manifests, and then there's unhealthy ways in which that manifests. And I feel like we live in a big culture where, you know, it's not incentivized to be vulnerable or not incentivized to do this or do that in relation to each other, whatever the this and that are. And it boils down to a thing where, how do you have positive role models that speak on these things? And also try not to, like, bat it on the head of somebody. Because I feel like, you know, you have to create and design environments where somebody can still get a scrape on their leg, but you know you can be there for them. Mm-hmm. Like, even playgrounds and jungle gyms. Like, I've seen so many kids hit their head on the bars by accident. Like, just by running and just doing that.
Yeah.
But, like, the amount of... But he's, as a teacher, he's just like, oh, my gosh. So
Gad is having PTSD right now.
but, like, the way that they're designed, like, the threshold of hurt is lessened so that, you know, you can have experience and that you can play on the playground. They still experience life. Still be in a vulnerable state while also learning good things, like maybe not run this fast, maybe try to navigate through this way, or, you know, even though you're having fun, be a little bit aware.
Situational awareness.
And also, you know, in this culture of lone wolf type of, like, behavior, really dissect where that comes from and really just kind of feel like, you know, is this playground designed for me? What are the ways in which it's not designed for me?
Yeah.
Now that I know that this is what the thing is doing in both positive and negative, let me see how I can make it better. Mm-hmm. Or let me tell other people what I found. Or try to find different ways and then meet people where they are. Like, the kid, after you run and hit your head and bumped your head and then you're okay, you heal, and then you see somebody else running, you know, stopping them from enjoying running. It's not going to tell them, not going to make them, like, not want to run.
Yeah.
But, you know, just having, like, a talk about a story, like, oh, man, this is, like, what happened to me one time outside of the situation.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, okay, like, that would have a greater impact.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like on a societal level, when we're talking about, like, spaces and safe spaces, a lot of times the conversation turns into a conversation about how fragile this group is for not accepting what we deem is a better way of living. But it's like, what is the situational awareness of this person at the given time? And it's like, this person may not have had this resources or the situation or even the language itself to communicate this. And I think it's just a good job to do, just as being people of safe spaces or just having things, you know, bending and breaking rules so that we incentivize the right kind of behavior. So like, I remember when I was in karate, you know, you would get in trouble if you did certain things, but even if you did that, there were certain ways in which like there was a level of forgiveness and amnesty for making bad decisions. So it wasn't like a culture of shame in the sense that like you were shamed and so you became closed off and so you didn't want to embrace your vulnerability and being open to a safe space. Instead, it was just like, I know you're in a vulnerable state, let me meet you with the vulnerability, but you can still be wrong. And that's a different level of adjustment as opposed to feeling like you're unwanted and having to adjust from that.
Making it okay to be wrong.
My
bad if I didn't answer the question. I went off on a tangent about Comic-Con. But real quick.
I felt like that was the answer.
I guess it was. Before we get into this last question, I guess thinking about the way I create safe spaces and how, I mean, it was kind of, I guess, navigating to emotional vulnerability as a man was kind of easy for me in ways. But in some ways it wasn't, because I've always felt like I was weird. Like I always felt like I was outcasted. So it was kind of just I'm gonna kind of observe and just kind of do what feels right to me. Like that's always been a thing. And I used to read a lot of comic books too. So that was kind of helped plant a moral compass back in like the golden age of comics. But anyway, so before we close out the episode, the last question, and you kind of touched on it a little bit, Sage, of course. But
I don't read these scripts beforehand. I'm sorry.
No, but it's perfect, though. I think I sent this to you guys, too. How are safe spaces, how and why are they important to marginalized communities? You know, like I said, we kind of slipped into it already. When I was thinking about this, the first thing that popped in my mind was visibility. You know, it's and it's not visibility to the outside world, even though I think that's important. It's visibility to the individual. You see people going through the same thing and having the same thoughts, and it's like that. There's power in saying, "Okay, I'm not alone in this." Like people feel and go through the same thing that I go through. Now we can create a space where we can. You know, we can create a diatribe and we can figure out how to get past this or how to grow or, you know, how to bring others in, you know.
I feel like one of the biggest things about that is also accessibility in relation to visibility. It's like, you know, letting other people know, like, you may not have like the exact same experience, but a similar experience is also like relatable at the very least, too. So it's like, you can feel comfortable in whatever background you may come from or whatever, you know, upbringing you may have had in relation to that accessibility and being able to say like, okay, maybe we don't relate on this level, but we relate on some level. And because of that, you know, we can offer a safe space around people that may have the similar aspects too. And then that also offers more safe spaces and more accessibility around that to where now there's like one overall safe space with smaller pockets of safe spaces within there that bring about the sense of like visibility for other people that may have like I said, a similar upbringing or background or accessibility to people that may not know about it or may not feel comfortable because they feel like they're not that relatable. But it's saying like you have something that's like an experience nonetheless, and because of that experience you can still find yourself in this safe space. It may not be that safe space over there, but at least it is a safe space regardless.
For marginalized people, I think the most important thing is just the small incremental like actions and honesty, because I think the actions of just one act of kindness and bridging the gap of a safe space is important. And it often comes from just even just a random smile from to a stranger and things of that nature. You know, a safe space doesn't necessarily have to only extend to people that you know or people that I feel like say, like to be the truest safe space is to be a friend to everybody, whether they like you or hate you. And I think very radically is to always be willing to be humble in the fact that not everybody knows you. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you are the biggest unknown. And so from operating from that standpoint, your goal is not to be known, it's to be felt. And just always being a safe space in that way.
Well put. So shout outs, thank yous.
Shout out to Ken. Shout out to my friend Thomas. Shout out his sister Jane. We played Super Smash Bros. That was so fun. Shout out to Prince. Shout out to Good Nature Souls. I love you guys.
GNS.
Shout out to my family. Shout out to my little cousin Liam. His birthday passed.
Yeah, happy birthday, Liam.
And he was singing reincarnation to you. It was so cute.
I saw that video. That was dope.
And shout out to everyone that made me feel safe. Shout out to my karate instructor. Shout out to people that listen to me, even if I sound annoying and I keep on prodding. but thank you guys.
For me, shout outs to first and foremost my cat Curtis back at home.
Curtis.
Shout out Curtis. I know you're probably scratching up a wall right now.
Daddy's gonna be home soon.
Yeah, I'll be there soon. Shout outs to my mom for, again, bringing me into this, you know, environment where I'm able to truly be myself and be able to grow and be able to understand that growth can come in many different forms and ways. And not only that, you know, being able to move past like all the trials and tribulations that we have had and like grow from those things as well to where we are now. So huge shout out to her. Shout out to, oh God, what should I shout out? Shout out to a very good musician that I know. Adrian is in a dub. Definitely check out his music if you're listening. Shout out to Kamei as well, K-H-M-E-I-I.
Oh, you know Kamei, that's fire.
Mm-hmm. He's awesome. And yeah, other than that, everybody else have a good night.
Hey, yo, shout out to my big brother who was on the last episode that posted. He'll be on the next episode that posts. We'll post soon, but I guess time is not really, you guys don't see time the way we do. Anyway, yo, shout out to my stepmom, who's also birthday just passed, but she just passed, so rest in peace. Shout out to my big sister, who actually just got president of the PTA, yo.
Whoa.
I just want you to know that you are the shit, big sister, and I love you.
That's amazing.
Yo, shout out to my mom and the rest of my family for being that that safe space for me, and shout out to my therapist.
Shout out my therapist.
Shout out to therapy, especially black therapists. Yeah, that was real quick. I don't know if I've said this on the podcast, but speaking of like safe spaces for black people, like it was one of those things where we kind of like. It was very important for me to get a black therapist, and me and her looked at each other. It was like, yo, because you know you can skip a whole bunch of steps and be like, okay, I know what you're talking about. Anyway, if you're listening, shout out to you. You've been a very safe, invisible audience. Appreciate you. Stay on.